This is the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Tonight we'll read from Chapter 2, which is entitled Contents of the Gita Summarized, and we're continuing with our discussion of text number 41. In order to save time, I'm just going to say the Sanskrit myself, and then we'll go straight to the translation and purport. Vyavasayatmika buddhireke hakurunandana bhushakahyanantascha buddhayo yavasayinam. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Purport. Shall I read it again? I mean, you've already heard it once, but it never hurts to repeat this.
Whoever reads it, reads it different.
Yeah, okay. A strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called Vyavasayatmika, intelligence. The Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 22.62 states, Shraddha shabde vishwas kahe sudrha nishchay Krishna bhakti kaila sarva karma krita hai. Faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligations to family traditions, humanity, or nationality. Fruitive activities are the engagements of one's reactions from past good or bad deeds. When one is awake in Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to dualities like good and bad. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. This state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness. The resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. Vasudevaha sarvamiti samahatma sadurlabha. A person in Krishna consciousness is the rare good soul who knows perfectly that Vasudeva, or Krishna, is the root of all manifested causes. As by watering the root of a tree, one automatically distributes water to the leaves and branches, so, by acting in Krishna consciousness, one can render the highest service to everyone, namely, self, family, society, country, humanity, etc. If Krishna is satisfied by one's actions, then everyone will be satisfied. Service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practiced under the able guidance of a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student and who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. As such, to be well versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna. And one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur instructs us in his famous prayers for the spiritual master as follows. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado Yasya prasadan nagati kutopi Jayan stuvam stasya yashastri santhyam Vande guroho shri charanaravindam. By satisfaction of the spiritual master, the supreme personality of Godhead becomes satisfied. And by not satisfying the spiritual master, there is no chance of being promoted to the plane of Krishna consciousness. I should, therefore, meditate and pray for his mercy three times a day and offer my respectful obeisances unto him, my spiritual master. The whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body. Not theoretically, but practically, when there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities. One who is not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruitive acts. In text number 39, Krishna has already instructed Arjuna that so far I've been talking about jnana, about Sankhya in particular, buddhi, that is to say intelligence that is steeped in Sankhya. Now listen, and I am going to explain it to you in terms of work, nishkam karma, working without any fruitive results. When you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. So Krishna, in that verse, is not only distinguishing what follows from what precedes it, his largely theoretical discussion on the difference between the soul and the body, but he's also identifying them at the same time by saying that this knowledge is in fact a question of action, not just theory. And then he goes on to encourage us in text 40 when he says, in this endeavor, there's no loss. Neha bhikramana shosti pratyavayo navidyate svalpam api yasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. You are freed from the greatest type of fear, even if you've advanced only a little bit in this endeavor, because there's no loss or diminution. It's called Vavisayatmika Buddhir. Ekeha Kurunandana. Eka. This buddhi is eka. It's only one. There are two things that are introduced in this verse, in each half of the verse, as a matter of fact. The first thing is the one thing, which is the Vavisayatmika Buddhi, the fixed intelligence. And the second thing is actually everything else, which is virtually unlimited. Bohu shaka hyanantascha buddhayo avyavasayinam. For those who are not resolute, their intelligences, plural, are virtually limitless. They're many-branched. Sridhar Swami comments on this verse by emphasizing this distinction. The distinction is essentially very simple. It is the distinction between fruitive activity and selfless activity, nishkama karma. We know, at least implicitly from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that bhukti mukti siddhi kamin shakale ashanta krishna bhakta nishkama ataiva shanta. Only the devotee of Krishna can actually be nishkama, be freed from desire. Only the devotee knows how to be fully engaged in the world without becoming entangled by it. Therefore, he's a perfect example of what Krishna has described elsewhere in the Gita. Padma patram ivambhasi. Just like a lotus is untouched by the water. Nalanid dalagata jalamati taralam tadvad jivitam atishaya chapalam. Shankaracharya, or one of his followers, says that just like a drop of water on a lotus leaf, because of the waxy surface there, it's very tenuous. And any situation within this material world is also very unstable in that way. But the lotus is also considered to be a perennial symbol of spiritual development because, we like to point out, there are many names for lotus flowers in Sanskrit language. What are some of them?
Kamala.
Kusum. Kusum means Padma. Saroja. We're getting warm.
Padma.
Yeah, what else? What about Pankaja? What does Pankaja mean? It's born in mud. The most dirty place that you can imagine is at the bottom of a pond. Where I live in MVT, there's a pond that needs to be cleaned. So that's called panka, all that gook at the bottom there. And this is where the lotus flower originates, but it pushes through and it gets even through the water, and it comes above the water also, and it blossoms into this beautiful flower, which is a symbol of spirituality, pankaja. So the lotus flower is like that. So bhakti yoga is the only process that actually allows one to remain engaged beyond mere theory, practically to be engaged to the full degree that one's human propensities would impel one to. And it does so in such a way that one's not contaminated at the same time. That's a very, very important point. But the pivot is invisible. What is the difference between fruitive activity and devotional service? What is it that determines the distinction between those two, essentially? Huh? Your intention, your desire. So it's all about desire. And elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says, he is warning Arjuna, you should know well the difference between fruitive action and devotional service. You should understand this distinction very clearly. So this is the distinction which is being made here, therefore, by Krishna. He's been talking about theoretical spiritual awareness, Sankhya, philosophy. He wants to make it a little bit more practical, because after all, this discussion is taking place on a battlefield. We all know that there are many, many ways to understand Bhagavad Gita. But at the end of the day, there's only one thing that Arjuna is going to do, and that's fight. And in the same way, sometimes it's said about Hinduism generally, there are many, many, I mean, it offers you infinite choices about what to believe, but no choices about how to act. You have a dharma to perform. And that dharma is automatic along with your birth. Because every birth in this world is affected by what? Huh? Okay, but what's the vehicle through which we transmigrate from one body to another? What's the agency here? The subtle body and a desire. What do we call the combination of the subtle body and the desire?
Man, buddhi,
ankara. Yeah, antakarana or man, buddhi, all these things. I'm thinking of the word swabhava. Swabhava means one's essential mindset, if you will, one's psychological state. It's what Krishna refers to when he says, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajanti ande kalevaram. He uses vague terms, but this is really what it amounts to, because one swabhava is carrying one to a particular type of body instead of some other kind of body. One swabhava, as we heard in class this morning, delimited by the scope of one's activities already performed. So you get what you desire, but according to what you've deserved, according to what you've done. If you've performed very sinful activities, then you get what you want, but within the limitations that are imposed on a person who has been sinful in those ways. My point is this, that corresponding to each and every swabhava that's possible in this world, and how many are possible? 8,400,000 different categories of swabhava. And then we have individual distinctions within each of those categories. So the swabhava is what impels one to take another kind of body in the next life. And once one takes that body, then the prarabdha karma kicks in. There are two classes of karma that we know. There's aprarabdha karma and there's prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma means that which is slated to play itself out in this lifetime in relation to the present body. Prarabdha karma is aprarabdha karma rather is a very complex subject, but it basically means everything else. And so as a
as an aspect, we can say, that's conditioning our present prarabdha karma. We have the swabhava that we have to deal with. But the important thing here is that with each and every swabhava, there is a corresponding swadharma that one must fulfill. And that is why we say, ordinarily, that when one is born as a human being, he is by default, automatically indebted to at least five classes of living beings. What are they? We have demigods that are administering our karma for us. Whatever we get in life, it's because of somebody's doing his dharma as a demigod. And we have our forefathers who gave us our parents. And we have great sages who have given us wisdom, how to act, how not to act. Right? We have the living entities who are, especially those who are depending upon us. We have an obligation to help them. We're indebted in so many ways. In other words, we have a dharma to perform. If we do not perform this dharma, then we, not only do we introduce an element of psychological effacement within our own swabhava as a result of non-performance of duty, but we actually disturb the balance of the entire universe, because everything is interrelated. In case you haven't noticed, everything is interrelated. We call this, in modern parlance, deep ecology. The scholars have a term for that. In fact, there's a hot new field of academia called religious ecology, because several have noticed there's a very clear connection between religious teaching and ecological, or teachings of deep ecology. Deep ecology means the fundamental principles on which environmentalism is based. A sensitivity to the laws of material nature, how they work, and how there's an interconnection between all things. So the science of relationships, what we call sambandha gyan, it's stated in quasi-secular terms throughout the Vedas as in terms of what we call dharma. And everybody has one. And if you do not perform your dharma, then you incur sinful reaction, which may jeopardize your future existence in some way. You will probably find that your desires will be further delimited by the imposition of karmic reactions. If you perform your karma nicely, then you automatically move up. It is guaranteed promotion in the reincarnation cycle. But what happens if you perform your duties, but there's a flaw in those duties? Sometimes we read, even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that somebody pronounced a mantra wrong in the performance of the sacrifice, or in the performance of his duty. Somebody made a mistake. For example, King Nariga, he made a mistake. He was doing the right thing, but there are accidents even on royal roads. And what happened? He somehow offended two Brahmins, and he was cursed, and he had to take birth as a lizard for doing the right thing, but in the wrong way. That is the essential flaw of the karma mark, the path of fruitive activities. You actually, generally speaking, in this day and age, in the Kali Yuga, you cannot follow that process, because you will mess up somehow or other. But in this verse, we're not talking about karma yoga. We're talking about bhakti yoga. This is the point that Sridhar Swami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur especially, certainly Srila Prabhupada in his purport also, they make this very clear. That what Krishna is referring to here is actually bhakti yoga, but it's manifested externally in terms of the conventions that are normal to karma yoga. Therefore, we can say with full authority here that in this verse, in this context, in this passage, karma yoga and bhakti yoga are one and the same thing. Let's think about this. How does Rupa Goswami define pure devotional service in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? What is Rupa Goswami's definition? Anyabhilashita shunyam and jnana karmadi anavritam. It is supposed to be free from any mixture of karma or yoga. So when you act, action in general is called karma. But particularly the ritual action intending to elevate one within the karmic paradigm, that's also called karma. We have to make a distinction between karma and karma. In Sanskrit, the easy words that everybody knows happen to be the hardest words that nobody understands. So there's a difference between karma and karma here. There are different definitions depending on the context. But the absolute rule is that if you act in a particular way, you will get the result of that action. It is inexorable. You cannot stop that from happening, even if you are a pure devotee. When we say that a pure devotee is beyond karma, we mean exactly what Prabhupada explains in his purport. When one is situated, this is a quote, when one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to dualities like good and bad. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. This state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness. Why am I emphasizing the word progressive? Sve sve adhikare ya nishtha saguna parikirtita, Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto. A person's qualification is determined by that person not attempting more than he or she is qualified to do, neither settling for anything less than one is fully qualified to do. That what you are fully qualified to do and therefore authorized to attempt is called adhikar. Adhikar. We know this word adhikar because we've heard it in other contexts. We have Kanishta adhikar, Madhyam adhikar, and Uttam adhikar in devotional service that we more often speak about. But adhikar is a very touchy word that, like many in Sanskrit, it doesn't really have an exact translation, but it means something more like prerogative. Because prerogative means not only that you are authorized or sanctioned, able to do, you know, you're given the green light to perform a particular activity, but the reason for that is that you actually have the ability to do it as well. Both those aspects have to be there. Your capability and your authorization. Those are both implicit in the word adhikar, but not in the word qualification. That's an important distinction to keep in mind. Anyway, the point that I'm making here is that although bhakti yoga may look like karma yoga at times, at other times it may look like jnana instead. And in fact, it's both of them at the same time. Well, it's not both of them at the same time, it's both of them at different times. So what is it that determines whether you're going to act, whether your adhikar is such that the instructions Krishna gives regarding jnana in Bhagavad Gita are more relevant to you, or whether the instructions that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita regarding karma are more relevant to you? That is why Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing in the later half of his purport. The resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. And then he says, service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practiced under the able guidance of a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna. That's the one thing. He has to represent Krishna in a bona fide manner. The second thing mentioned, he has to know the nature of a student. Because it's not enough just to be a sincere devotee. You also have to be a competent judge of character in order to be a bona fide spiritual master. That's the second thing Prabhupada mentions here. And who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. You have to have both feet on the ground to the degree that you can actually tell someone what to do and what not to do in a given time, place, and circumstance. This is the function of the acharya. And we see that sometimes people are very pure, but they're not particularly confident. And sometimes we see people who are very competent, but they're not particularly pure. And when you have that imbalance like that, it doesn't really work out so well. Srila Prabhupada and a few others, who we can see, they have this rare combination. that they're able not only to act in a bona fide manner that represents Krishna, but they can also understand. They have empathy. In the sixth chapter, Krishna tells Arjuna, who is the best yogi? It's not the final birth. Think midway. 632, anybody know this verse? Atmaupam yena sarvatra samam pasyati Arjuna sukham va yadivadukham sa yogi paramomata. I consider the best yogi to be that person who's able to empathize with others. He can understand what is that person's pain and what is that person's pleasure, because he remembers his own experience. Therefore, sometimes Krishna makes us suffer. Suffering is actually very good for you, for spiritual advancement. It's very good for you. It's not pleasing, but it does help us to sometimes empathize with others. And that's a very, very important qualification, especially if we would follow the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What instruction am I thinking of? Standing mandate he has given to everyone. Jare dakhet dekho tare kaha Krishna upadesh ityadi. He tells us all to become a guru. But you first deserve, then you desire. You have to develop the adhikar. This is why the word progressive Krishna consciousness is so important. At a beginning stage of one's Krishna consciousness, when the mind is thoroughly infected by material desire, there is no possibility, virtually, of hearing from a pure devotee even, and taking it in the right way. One will twist and twangle it into something unrecognizable, far beyond what was intended. We all do this, we have to admit. This is called the Sahajiya tendency. While we do this, we assume that we're not doing it. So, at that point, it is very, very important for a person to follow the injunctions that are given in the Shastra, as Krishna says regarding such persons in chapter 16. Text 23 onwards, when he emphasizes what to do and what not to do must be determined on the basis of Shastra Vidhanokta, what vidhis are given in the Shastra. So that is also the general concern of Dharma. Just as Vaidhi Bhakti is concerned with vidhis, so the general normative Dharma is also concerned with vidhis. Injunctions and prohibitions. One has to follow those. The automatic result of following those is that one's intelligence gradually gets purified, because inbuilt into the system of Dharma, or Shastric injunctions generally, there are several very purifying things, such as yajna, dana, tapa, that is to say, sacrifice, austerity, charity. These are things that Krishna says several times in Bhagavad Gita are never to be given up, because they purify even the great souls. So when one's intelligence is purified in this way, then one has what we call jnanadhikar. One has the prerogative, if you will, or the qualification to hear something and not distort it. But that's not enough either. And that's the point of this verse. Well, beginning from verse 39, Krishna has shifted gears a little bit. He's trying to make this a little bit practical. He's reminding Arjuna, suggesting subtly, that you've it's not enough just to appreciate these things by hearing very nicely. You've actually got to do something about this. You have to react. You've got to make a choice. In most cases, we have to change our lifestyle. And that's never a comfortable thing to do. We heard this morning, isn't it? In the Srimad Bhagavatam class. We have to make some changes that are not very, maybe, palatable. And it doesn't matter who you are. All of us who are conditioned with the assumption that Ishwaroham aham bhogi, siddhoham, balavan, sukhi, I'm already perfect, I'm happy, I'm the controller. This attitude is an unhealthy one, Krishna says in chapter 16, and it has to be changed. And that's never a very pleasing process for the mind and for the senses. But the nature of sattvic happiness is that it's such in the beginning, and then later on it turns into nectar. The nature of rajasic happiness is what? It's the other way around. And the nature of tamasic happiness is what? There is no such thing. When you're in tamoguna, you just, it's bewilderment and suffering from beginning to end. It never changes. You never get off the ground in tamoguna. We have an entire civilization solidly steeped in such tamoguna right now. Where is the department in the universities, Prabhupada used to rhetorically ask, wherein they're teaching the difference between a living body and a dead body? Simple thing. Very simple thing. But it's not emphasized because people think they already understand it. We assume that the set of assets that I take for granted currently is going to reincarnate with me into the next body. It's not so. You can't even keep them in this life. Have you experienced that yet? The speaker of this morning's Bhagavatam class experienced that. Now he's crippled. He didn't used to be. This happens to people, ordinary people like you and I. One day I know there was one devotee woke up and she could not see anything. She just woke up blind one day. It happens. So we have to be very careful about this. Anyway, so we're not pushing karma yoga here. Krishna is not pushing karma yoga, even though he's distinctly trying to emphasize to Arjuna that it is important to follow the vidhis of the shastras. And it is important also to act in Krishna consciousness. And in the beginning stages of adhikar for bhakti, it's actually called karma yoga instead for that reason. But that doesn't mean that it's ordinary karma or that it's something different than Krishna consciousness. In exactly the same way that there's no difference between a green mango and a ripe mango. They're both mangoes. I mean, it's an achinja bhedabhed situation, right? Because if you look at the mango in terms of Ayurveda, they have opposite properties. The ripe mango and the green mango, they will have the opposite effect on your constitution. So they're different, but they're not different because they're both mangoes. And in exactly that way, in Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is giving instructions, not Bhagavad Gita, even Srimad Bhagavatam also, the same thing is there. Bhagavatam is like an expanded version of Bhagavad Gita, especially in the 11th canto. When Krishna is giving instructions on karma, yoga, it's not mundane karma, and particularly not in this verse. And when he's talking about jnana, it's also not necessarily mundane jnana. Because otherwise, why does Krishna speak in terms of janma karma cha me divyam? And that somebody who understands my transcendental karma, he becomes equally transcendental and so do his activities. Or how is it that we pray to our spiritual master every morning, Dibya Gyan Hriday Prakashita. Please awaken this Dibya Gyan. So, the distinction between Divya Gyan and ordinary Gyan, the distinction between Divya Karma and ordinary Karma is only one's invisible intention. And therefore, we do not judge other people because you cannot see another person's intention. Only Krishna can see that. Now, what else have we to say about this? Sridhar Swami points out that if one fails to perfectly perform one's mundane duties in the karma system, not karma yoga, just karma, then the whole thing is a loss, because unless you finish properly executing your prescribed duty, you incur sin. And also, if you do not perform your duty, you incur sin. And if you perform your duty imperfectly, you incur sin. So it's a lose-lose situation if you are not a devotee. But if you are a devotee, not only is it not mundane karma, but you do not have to undergo these reactions. That's the whole point of these verses. Neha vikramanashosti pratyavaya nivityate svalpamapi asya dharmasya. Dharma, he's using the word. Svalpamapi. Even a little bit, it's enough. Now, how do we know that this is confirmed? That this is not my philosophy, this is actually Srila Prabhupada's philosophy. Let's jump ahead to text number 31 of the third chapter, in which Srila Prabhupada writes, "An ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord. But because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness," because those are tamasic symptoms, we know from later on in Bhagavad Gita, "he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness." So there's no waste, even if one improperly or imperfectly performs one's prescribed duty for the purpose of pleasing Krishna in bhakti yoga and for the purpose of spiritual elevation thereby. This is the point that Srihar Swami is emphasizing on this in his commentary on this verse. Ramanujacharya even more so. Baladeva Vidyabhushan is consonant. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is instead emphasizing the fact that this is actually pure devotional service. And we mentioned in the beginning, I'll make it more explicit now. Dharmasya tattvasya nihitam guhayam mahajano yena gata sapanta. It's very difficult for an ordinary person, not difficult, it's actually impossible for an ordinary person to understand what is dharma in this world. It is virtually impossible, especially in Kali Yuga. Because argument is not conclusive, even the shastras are at variance with one another, and so many people say so many things. Madhvacharya is pointing out in his commentary on this verse that, okay, Krishna, it's very nice what you're saying. He's presenting a doubt that Arjuna might raise. What you're saying is very nice, but how can I put my faith in what you're saying, because everybody else is saying so many other things also? How do I know that you're telling me the truth? So, therefore, Krishna says, Eka, Eka Iha, Guru Nandana. This thing is only one. If somebody applies proper pramana, that means epistemology, or proofs, and in a logical way, according to the standard conventions that have been established by Vaishnava acharyas, he can only arrive at one conclusion. This is Madhva's commentary on this verse, Madhvacharya. But anyway, even if one is improperly following this path, there is no loss, because that loss is immediately destroyed, Sridhar Swami says, by dint of the fact that it has been offered unto the Lord. Yad yad karomi sakalam parasmai narayanaiva samarpayami kayena vacha manasendriyaiva buddhyatmana va prakate svabhava. Again, the word is there, svabhava. By dint of offering it to the Lord, it becomes immediately free. In exactly the same way that when we glorify Krishna, even though we may have imperfect language, or, you know, we may need to be edited, still it's considered to be perfect. That Vag Visargo Janataga Viplavo Ityadi, those verses are there in the first canto. Okay, so I don't know if these things are any more clear now than they were in the beginning, but these are a few things that I don't think anybody else has discussed yet. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe somebody has been emphasizing the importance of this verse, which Srila Prabhupada saw after he read the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He understood how important is the order of the spiritual master? And that's something that Srila Prabhupada is also making inescapably clear in his own purport here. And he's adding a little bit still to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport, in that he's emphasizing the extreme importance of faith. Faith. Faith is so important. Even the Bible, Christian Bible, they say, had ye but faith, you could move mountains. It's like that. We say in our own parlance, mukam koroti vachalam pangum langhayate girim ityadi. There's another nice one. Vande Shri Gurudevam tam karuna varunalayam yat kripa lavaleshena pamoropi amarayate. That I am offering my obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, who is an ocean of mercy, and by even one drop of whose blessings, even a pamara, an outcast, can become an immortal. He can become a demigod. So the impossible thing can become possible if we just have faith. And this is the point. Sri Krishna is also emphasizing here that Arjuna, those who have this faith, they're focused. Focus. With the power of focus, you can take the sun's rays that are diffused throughout the vast sky, and you can pinpoint them through a magnifying lens in such a way that you can burn down an entire forest. That's the power of focus. That is called Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, and it is intended to be focused on the order of the spiritual master. This is the second thing that I see, at least, in this purport, because we've already decided that thing which makes very clear the distinction between fruit of activity and devotional service is only the instruction of the spiritual master. Because the spiritual master may give entirely opposite instructions to different individuals in terms of how to implement Krishna consciousness in a concrete time, place, and circumstance. That happens all the time. You cannot depend on static formulas. It is dynamic. And that is why the spiritual master is absolutely indispensable. Even the definition of words, we talked a little earlier about the difficulty in translating some Sanskrit words. Where do we get these definitions from? From the dictionary? No. We get them only from our acharyas. Because the lexicographers, those people who write dictionaries, they only can do so on the basis of an attested usage that they have found somewhere. So ultimately it comes from the acharyas. Therefore, acharyavan purushoveda. Somebody who has an acharya, he knows. I'm going to stop here. Does anybody have any questions or comments? We've covered a lot of ground. There's a lot of things more that I could say, but in the interest of saving time, I'll stop. Yes, please. If there's a microphone, you can hold on.
Prabhuji, you were saying in one point that suffering will help us to progress in our spiritual life. Like, how we can take it in a positive way in our life?
That's why we have gurus. Because the instructions of when you're suffering, you need someone. And the spiritual master has the empathy to understand that you're suffering. And he understands the magnitude of your suffering. He also understands how to apply the abstract principles of Krishna consciousness in a specific time, place, and circumstance, each of which is necessarily going to be different than the others. So we have spiritual masters for this purpose. They can help us. And spiritual master is extended, especially in ISKCON. We put a lot of emphasis on Shiksha Gurus as well. If one's Diksha Guru is not accessible, then we can take shelter of those in whom we have faith, and they can help us to understand how to deal with suffering. But the general principle is described very nicely if you read the commentary on the verse in the Bhagavatam. Tatyanukampam susumikshamano punjana evatmakritam vipakam. Atmakritam vipaka means I cook this thing, now I've got to eat it. Vipaka means cooked. fried, deep fried. So this is the general understanding of a devotee, or as Prabhupada is also, he stated it here in his purport to today's verse nicely. Let's see if I can find it again. Fruitive activities are the engagements of one's reactions from past good or bad deeds. Fruitive activities are themselves the reactions of one's engagement in good or bad in the past. So suffering is usually, you can't say. Sometimes we're suffering as a result of offenses. That also happens. We have to be a little sensitive. And there also, a spiritual master is indispensable, because in the beginning especially, we cannot be sensitive. We don't have the capacity. We are not developed. We're green mangoes. So one can take shelter of the spiritual master, or in the devotees in general, and those who are empathetic, they can help us to deal with suffering. But the general principle is that I've created this mess for myself, and the principle of humility is that I actually deserve much worse than this. Because we don't really know that that's not so, do we? We really don't know. At least that's Prahlad Maharaj's sentiment. So otherwise, you know, it's going to be very specific to the time, place, and circumstance. But everybody has to go through suffering. Usually in life, everybody goes through some heavy thing at some point. So if we understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness very well, then we can deal with it. Therefore, we have this regular program every single day. We rise early. We chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. When my father was dying of spinal cancer, that's not an easy way to go. It's very painful. But the thing that impressed me, maybe even more than his condition at that time, was that I saw all the other patients in the hospital ward. And every single one of them was dealing with a very heavy personal crisis in terms of some sort of psychophysical disintegration. You know, that the mind was going in one person, the body's going in another one, everything's fine in the other one, but it can't urinate. Imagine, how long would you last? You can't urinate. That happens to people. It's a crisis situation, and it has repercussions at the psychological level that most of us cannot even imagine. Old age. Old age is like getting sick and you don't get better again. Right? It's like getting the flu and you don't recover. You just stay that way. I mean, because basically old age means that your mind and body are rotting while you're still inside it. That's really what it comes down to. And when it gets, you know, so rotten that you just can't deal with it, you just go. That's death. So we have to undergo suffering, and it's good for us, and sometimes it's not the result of our bad karma, and sometimes it's not the result of our offenses either. Sometimes it's Krishna's own sweet will. And in some ways, that's the hardest thing to deal with, because he's supposed to be nice. But we call this tough love. Or as they call it in America, attitude adjustment. Sometimes that's the only way for a person to learn certain things. Many times that's really the only way. We have to undergo suffering. Those who have undergone very profound suffering, they know this. And those who don't understand, I warned you in the beginning. Those who don't, who haven't undergone profound suffering, they have to accept it on faith until they do. And then they'll get the first-hand experience. But we can prepare ourselves for dealing with that experience by simply following this process very diligently in what the Bhagavatam calls tivra bhakti, intense devotion. Or as we're talking about here also, vyavasayatmika buddhi, fixed focus, concentrated, you know, attention to this process, because it will elevate us faster than if we take it easy. And when the difficulties come, which they certainly will, then we will be ready to deal with it. As much as you have burned into your hard drive, burned into your chip, so to speak, that much you can draw on. At the time of death, you have nothing except whatever has been so internalized that it's inseparable from the subtle body that you take with you. You have to do it that way. This is the Upanishadic realization that I got when I saw these patients in the hospital along with my father. I mean, this thing, we have to really put it very deeply. And there's no way to do that except every single day. And sometimes Krishna gives us a nudge out of his own sweet will just to help us. Now, a few months ago, we had a nice purport in the beginning of the fifth canto in which Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur again was explaining that sometimes it's not just your bad karma, neither is it offenses, nor is it Krishna's will, but the devotees want you to undergo suffering. That's the hardest thing of all, isn't it? Not them. And sometimes this suffering is imposed by this, how shall I say, incomparable class that we call the God brother or the God sister. They can be the agents of great suffering if it's meant to be. Anyway, I don't want to ramble too much, but I hope that's something of an answer for you that's helpful. You can apply. Anything else? Yes, please. To develop such a strong faith. I'm going to ask people in the room to volunteer answers for that question because there's so many that I can't decide which one to give you. Parvati, Mataji.
There's that verse. I can't tell you, but you'll tell me. It's a detachment and practice.
Yeah. Well, there's several verses of that sort. Are you thinking of... Okay, go ahead. Explain.
Even in the material world, you can't get anywhere without practice.
Mm-hmm.
There's the old joke where somebody's in New York and they ask, how do I get to Carnegie Hall? It's a famous cultural hall, especially where famous musicians play. So somebody's asking, how do I get to Carnegie Hall?
As a performer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the answer is practice, practice, practice.
Yeah.
So basically practice, but detachment. And I have a feeling that the detachment which Krishna's talking about comes by practice, from the practice. I don't think you can have it without.
You know, this is kind of a spin-off of a point that I would like to make, which is one that Krishna makes at the end of chapter 7 when he says, Yesham tuantagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam ityadi. When we just follow the standard rules and regulations, particularly of bhakti yoga, sadhana bhakti especially, the natural result I mentioned is such that we are elevated. And that includes elevation of our faith, because especially in the bhakti system, there's one more very prominent thing which produces faith that is explicitly said to do so. Who knows what that is?
Association
of devotees. This is the main thing I would say, actually. When we say sadhu sangha sarva siddhi hoy, we should not underestimate. I mean, sarva siddhi is an absolute expression. It means every perfection is there through association of devotees. And in particular, when we associate with those, Rupa Goswami advises us to associate with those who have faith that's very similar to our faith, but more of it. Sajati ashaya snigtha, he says. We should find somebody who has a faith of the similar kind that I have, and somebody that we can relate to in Krishna consciousness, but is more advanced than us in terms of the degree to which they've surrendered, that person we have to associate with, and then our faith will not automatically be increased. So main answer I would give is always association. Association is 90% of our advancement. R?
I got some experience on this. Normally during good times it is very difficult to develop firm faith.
During good times?
Yes.
Yeah.
Until unless you are in deep trouble,
yeah,
you cannot develop that faith.
Yeah. This is why Kunti Devi also says, Janmaishwarya Shuddha Shibhirdeda Mala Mata Puman Naivaraha Abhidhatum Vaya Tvam Akinchana Gocharam.
Because in good time it becomes theoretical.
It becomes theoretical because we're actually investing our attention and our love and our desires into something fruitive. This is the natural tendency. This is what it means to be conditioned. Conditioned means you're moving in a particular groove that is preset. And unless you make a very concerted effort to change that, you're going to go in the same way. That's what it means to be conditioned. And for most of us, it takes a couple of decades before we realize that, you know, I'm actually conditioned. So that's a very good point. That's very true. Suffering is important for that reason, and that's one of many reasons that Krishna gives it to us from time to time. There's also that famous verse, Yasyaham anugrishnami harishyeta dhanam shanai. The symptom of the person that I've given my mercy to is that I take everything away from him. Because when you're left with nothing, or when you become akinchana gochara, then what choice do you have but to take shelter of God? People do this. Okay, anything else? All right, so we can stop there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.